Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the OIES China Energy Program. My name is Anders Hovey, Senior Research Fellow at the Institute, and today we're talking about the important topic of China's manufacturing sector and its present and future energy and emissions trajectory. Our guest today is Edmund Downey. Downey is a second-year PhD student in the Science, Technology, and Environmental program at the Princeton School of Public and International Affairs. He studies how to build durable pathways for deep decarbonization in China and India using a combination of energy systems modeling and political science approaches. Ned is the author of two chapters in the Guide to Chinese Climate Policy, which we published last year together with the Columbia Center on Global Energy Policy. It's available for download on our website. Ned, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks a lot for having me, Anders. Excited to be here.
Now, in the guide, you wrote about the manufacturing sector, not specifically about renewables or clean energy, but carbon emissions in the manufacturing sector as a whole. Can you give us a brief overview of why this sector is so important for climate and why it merited a chapter in the guide?
So manufacturing is important in China from an emissions perspective on two fronts. So one is because it's just a very large share of China's emissions, because it's a very large industry in China. And the other is that it's an enormous share of global manufacturing emissions, because China represents an enormous share of global manufacturing output in emissions-intensive products. So a couple numbers here, right? China is the world's manufacturing powerhouse. I think that's pretty well known. The gross value added of manufacturing is around a quarter of Chinese GDP, and about 30% of global manufacturing value added comes out of China. So for comparison, that's about as much as the US and EU combined. And China is particularly strong in very energy-intensive and emissions-intensive industries. So more than 50% of the world's steel and cement comes out of China. And those two industries cover about 15% of global greenhouse gas emissions. And you also have more than 50% of other products like methanol, aluminum, and then 30 to 40% of ammonia, plastics, textiles. So unsurprisingly, then manufacturing is going to be a big part of Chinese emissions. You know, it's about 55% of energy use in China and about 60% of carbon dioxide emissions on at least a scope 1 and scope 2 basis, that is emissions from direct sources and also from electricity it's purchased. It's about 6 gigatons, which is more than any other individual country in the world. For comparison, right, 60% of CO2 emissions from the manufacturing sector, by comparison, the U.S. is around a third from industry, which is the comparable category. So you can see that these are really, really large numbers, large figures, large share. The other thing that why we should talk manufacturing separately from other sectors is that the reduction pathways differ. So of that 6 gigatons that I mentioned, around 2.5 gigatons are from electricity. And we know how to decarbonize power relatively well, right? Though industry is a bit different, you need pretty consistent supply. You can't have just variable renewables in the same way. Solar available now, not available later. It affects the a lot of industrial components at times, but we know a decent bit about decarbonizing power. The 3.5 gigatons, though, those are direct emissions. It's from combusting fuels for heat, industrial processes, and for mitigating these emissions, you need different processes, and we can talk about that more later.
Within the manufacturing sector, what are the largest energy-consuming sectors, and then CO2-emitting sectors? You already mentioned steel and cement, so I guess we're going to start there. And what is their trend in terms of their emissions, their energy consumption?
I like to bang on about steel and cement. They are the most energy-intensive and emissions-intensive sectors within China. Well, at least most within industry. Most emissions-intensive, I should say. Just as a general matter, manufacturing, emissions, and energy use, they are fairly top-heavy in terms of sectoral breakdown. Really, four or five sectors are particularly important. So around 40% of energy and 50% of CO2 are from these four or five industries. Cement and steel, the most important, that's about 35% of national emissions in total. And the other ones that matter are chemicals and petrochemicals. So that's like making ammonia for fertilizer or methanol or processing of hydrocarbon fuels, of fossil fuels. And then also non-ferrous metals, especially aluminum, which is sort of widely referred to as congealed electricity because of how electricity intensive it is. A few notes on these. You mentioned the efficiency trends. These are very large sectors, but they're also fairly efficient in general by global standards. Obviously, large country, wide. There's some laggards, there are leaders, but the national averages in some of these sectors are relatively strong, at least on an energy perspective. So to give you a sense, energy intensity of Chinese manufacturing fell threefold from 2000 to 2014. And that was kind of the key period of progress in this sphere, that is, in energy intensity reductions. The major contribution to those reductions really was Chinese firms replacing small and inefficient facilities with larger new ones. So you saw steel energy intensity falling 30%. One of my favorite numbers is that cement output grew 2.5 times from 2005 to 2014 as fast as coal consumption. So cement output grew around 100, almost 150%. Coal consumption grew around 50%. Now, on the other hand, this also means that there's relatively limited scope for progress going forward on this energy efficiency gains, or at least you're not going to see the dramatic drops that you did in the 2000s and the early 2010s. China's fleet in these energy intensive sectors tends to be of the plants that produce these products, tends to be 7 to 15 years old or something like that, right? And these are assets with 40-year lifetimes. So we're not going to see that level of fleet turnover again anytime soon, or at least not on the scale that we did before. Some processes, I should also say the last thing in the steel sector, some processes are very CO2 intensive, at least processes that China uses for manufacturing some of these products. So I'm going to highlight steel in particular. The major greenhouse gas intensive step in steel production is obtaining iron. Steel is basically, you have iron oxide, then you turn into iron, then you turn into steel. And there are two ways to get the iron, that middle step. Either you can recycle existing steel or you can reduce iron oxide to iron. Only about 20% of the Chinese iron source is from scrap, that is recycled steel. The world average is more around 40 to 45%. That's partly a structural thing. A great way to have recycled steel is when you have, your developed country and you already have a lot of kind of steel in use. China is not necessarily that case, still building a lot, urbanizing, still it's an important feature of that industry.
That's the story for CO2. I know that for industry as well, there's the issue of non-CO2 gases, which are more concentrated in just a handful of sectors. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, they're more concentrated in a handful of sectors. The scope is fairly limited. This is not like the most important non-CO2 greenhouse gas in general across the economy is methane, and methane is not a huge presence in the manufacturing sector. But there are certain greenhouse gases that are, where manufacturing is an important source. So that's N2O, nitrous oxide, and then F gases. The last official inventory that we had from China was in 2014, that is greenhouse gas inventory. And in that year, N2O and F gases comprised around 3 to 4% of total Chinese emissions. N2O has grown a lot from industrial sources over the past 15 years or so, at least. As this is according to the scientific literature on the subject. And that's largely from the chemical industry. It's a byproduct in particular of fertilizer production. F gases a chemical industry is an important source. Also aluminum, where Chinese facilities have very, very high PFC, this particular type of F gas, PFC emissions. There's a great report by a team, Phil McKenna and Lily Pike, at Inside Climate News late last year that talked about this issue. Both of these are important, in particular, these kinds of gases, that is N2O and F gases, because they do have fairly long lifetimes, in particular F gases. And so the warming impact they have is one that will be fairly prolonged. That being said, there's no current control plan within China. So this is an important topic for further monitoring and further policy progress.
I want to talk a little bit about the trend in emissions overall from the manufacturing sector. And in particular, why is it that the trend from emissions in the manufacturing sector tends to be more volatile than I guess you'd expect from the economy as a whole?
Speaking broadly, over the past couple decades, the trend in manufacturing has been of emissions, that is, two stages, and rapid growth in the 2000s, early 2010s, and then a kind of volatile leveling off from the early 2010s to today. So early around 2000 or so, 2 gigatons of emissions total from the manufacturing sector. By the early 2010s, it was more than 6 gigatons, right? It's threefold growth. But then over the past decade, more or less, you've had fluctuations around that 6 gigaton level. And a lot of ways, when it's the early stage, reflects, that is the 2000s and the 2010s, just reflects the rapid growth in the Chinese economy. What you're seeing in the mid-2010s has been really tracking Chinese stimulus policy, that is Chinese economic policy management. Some of that was important in the late 2010s or in the late 2000s as well. So to be more specific, real estate is a major end use for energy intensive sectors. Steel, 60% of it goes to construction. Cement, obviously, almost all of it goes to construction, if not all. In the late 2000s, with the great financial crisis, since then, infrastructure stimulus, and arguably probably predating that as well, infrastructure stimulus has been an important component of Chinese growth, so or general urbanization and large construction. You had a major stimulus after the great financial crisis in the late 2000s that drove continued upward growth in cement and steel production, defying predictions at the time that those sectors would peak in their output. Then you had a drawback in stimulus in the mid-2010s, and so emissions started to fall. And then you had stimulus again in the late 2010s, and so emissions started to rise. And during the COVID period, same pattern. COVID, lockdowns, economies quiet, emissions fall, stimulus in response to COVID as part of the opening, and more general kind of pent-up demand in the sector, and emissions rise a lot. But what's really important now is that the era of stimulus for growth seems to be closing. Stimulus is a very sort of debt-fueled investment approach to driving growth, and there's a weakening appetite for that among Chinese policymakers today. Pretty limited stimulus this year. Last year, new real estate investment was down 10%. That was the first year-on-year decline in 25 years. And so we're seeing steel demand leveling off. It was down 3.5% in 2022. And weaker demand than expected, probably up around 2% this year on year this year, mean that prices have hit a 3-year low. And that demand is probably not going to change going forward. So the trends are really shifting on that front. And we could finally see the long predicted decline in emissions from those sectors.
Now, the Chinese government, in its nationally determined contribution, or NDC, as a target of having a, quote, green and low carbon transformation of the industrial sector. What are some of the general targets for the sector, like peaking carbon emissions, as well as for energy intensity?
So well asked, targets are a pretty specific way for Chinese policymakers to express their goals, strong reliance upon those for guiding high level direction in the Chinese economy. As always within China, the targets that have been set for industry are fairly conservative. So, and they match generally the national targets as well for the economy as a whole. So peak emissions by 2030, cut energy intensity from 2021 to 2025 by around 13.5%, and then cut carbon intensity by at least the national level or more. So the national target for reduction in carbon intensity is 18%, so probably 18%+. These targets are pretty consistent with prior 5-year plans. That is the main planning cycle that China uses. These targets for this 5-year plan from 2021 to 2025 are pretty in line with the targets that have been set in prior years.
Right. So the peaking doesn't necessarily entail an immediate change to the pathway that was underway before. What are the substantive carbon peaking plans for the high emitting sectors like steel and cement? What's their plan for carbon neutrality? How do they go there? Is it mainly through technology, through structural economic change, through greater efficiency overall? What's the plan?
I'm going to start with the peaking plans, because those are the ones where I think we have the clearest sense of what the long-term policy vision is. It's really the primary focus of the policy apparatus at this point. And the truth is that it's, you know, plans have been laid out, but it's also very, very easy to peak in a lot of these sectors. In a basic sense, if your carbon intensity is constant of your production, there are two ways to reduce emissions. Either produce the same amount and output less carbon per unit produced, or produce less. In the Chinese case, you know, as we've been suggesting already, it looks like potentially output is, if not already peaked, then very shortly peaking in these sectors, and certainly well before 2030. Already in steel, for instance, we've seen output reductions imposed by government planning. So, and their output is down from about 1.06 billion tons in 2020 to around 1.01 billion tons in 2022. And the leading steel think tank, government think tank within China, predicts another drop, a mild drop, to 1 billion tons sharp in 2023. Production has started strong in this past year, up 4% year on year, but low prices are prompting to cool off and suggest that this target is very much within reach. And I think we can say the same for cement. The cement industry has set a target at an industrial level. The Industrial Association for Building Materials has set a target of peaking emissions in cement by 2023. Again, this is not very difficult. All you need to do is just stop producing more cement. As the real estate sector continues to cool, this feels very deliverable. That being said, there are some other aspects for cutting carbon intensity that are important and will be important long-term for driving faster drops. One is, obviously energy intensity. There are some modest targets for cutting energy intensity in cement, 2%, steel, 3.7% over the next through 2025. There are also some production pathway shifts. In steel in particular, a shift towards producing more via recycled steel to reduce China's iron ore dependence, as well as some of the pollution from the very highly polluting blast furnaces. And in aluminum, to shift more production to hydropower plentiful areas to reduce the reliance upon fairly inefficient coal plants that drive a good chunk of Chinese steel production in the Northeast these days.
I think I have a good idea that it's about a combination of declining demand, improvements in efficiency, some shifts in production methods to recycling, to renewable energy. Does that get us all the way to carbon neutrality, though, for those sectors? Probably not, right? There needs to be some major technology component.
Definitely not, yeah. And that's why some of these sectors get described as hard to abate, steel and cement in particular. That's because, again, you think back to how I broke out these emissions at the start, right? Six gigatons of total emissions from manufacturing. 2.5 gigatons are from electricity, 3.5 gigatons are from process. So process heating, process emissions, things like that. Some of these steps that I've described are ones that reduce the process heating aspect. But the sort of the net zero story is one that requires the introduction of some pretty early stage technologies. And that's true around the world. So I'll highlight two in particular that I think there's a lot of interest in within China right now. One is the expansion of deployment of hydrogen, which is a valuable tool for decarbonizing steel production, as well as fertilizer production. This is one where there are very strong policy supports within China, particularly in the transportation sector, and also a booming electrolyzer industry. And this latter aspect in particular is something that I think will continue to create demand for growth in hydrogen production in the same way as you can think of the story of solar within China, right? China is the world's solar panel manufacturer. And it is deployed solar in large scales domestically, in part as a reaction to that or as a way to create local demand for this enormous globally competitive manufacturing industry. That was kind of the early story of solar subsidies in the early 2010s. I think hydrogen, we can sort of use a similar framework to analyze the growth of hydrogen. And so that's promising for its continued expansion. Again, the focus is really transportation right now. There are some interesting pilots in the steel sector, but they generally involve not producing new hydrogen, but recycling existing off gases or emissions that and purifying them to extract hydrogen from them. But still, another major technology that I think forms a pretty strong contrast is in CCUS, where there's less ambition. And that's really because there's no money in CO2 often, unless you can find ways to utilize it. CO2 is not a global commodity. CO2 pipelines are not a global commodity in the way the electrolyzers are, for instance. And so the policy supports are weaker. Certainly, there are a number of existing pilots around scaling up CCUS, and it's going to be an important part of the solution, particularly for cement and also for some of these blast furnaces, which are pretty young facilities, and you'd expect that China will want to avoid retiring them if possible. But the current policy environment is fairly challenging for that, and I wouldn't expect that China to be a major source of innovation on that front.
Very interesting. And we'll have to have you on here again to talk about some of those other sectors. Keeping on the topic of steel, cement, and other manufacturing emissions, China has, by some accounts, the world's largest carbon market. The carbon market has been in existence for several years, but only covers the electric power sector, and actually only within a part of the electric power sector, which is coal and coal heating. When will carbon trading be introduced for manufacturing sectors, such as those that would be exposed to carbon border adjustment mechanism, CBAM? And if carbon trading was expanded to cover more manufacturing sectors, especially those where there might be demand for hydrogen or for other low carbon techniques to enable them to be globally competitive, such as in markets where there's a CBAM, would China's carbon market have any impact on the emissions from these manufacturing sectors? Two-part question.
Start with just the logistics of the carbon trading program. So when it's going to cover these sectors remains unclear. Soon-ish is what I would say. And that's on a scale of soon-ish in terms of years. China has set a goal of covering 8 sectors with its ETS. Those include steel, cement, paper, chemicals, some other sectors as well. The timeline for expansion is not one that's necessarily been specified. The latest that I've heard from Chinese experts is they're seeing cement and aluminum at least likely in by 2025, as well as chemicals and paper. Steel, not so sure. The major challenge, or at least one of the major challenges, is around data quality. There's a good bit of measurement work that needs to be done in terms of building capacity for participating in these markets, getting a good grasp on plant-level CO2 emissions. This is not something that firms focused on in general until the Chinese 30-60 goals. And so it's a new area for a lot of firms, or at least has been over the past couple of years. And there's still progress to be made on that front. The other aspect, though, is even when they do get extended, the question is, how high are the prices? How much do you have to pay in order to comply with your emissions, based on your emissions? If compliance is cheap for your emissions, then you might as well just pay and not reduce your emissions. And certainly prices are pretty low right now. That's not inconsistent with how prior carbon markets have been rolled out. The question is whether they continue to rise, as a lot of experts believe and hope they will. And also whether the structure is changed from an intensity-based approach to an absolute emissions-based approach. Will also be depending upon basically how permitting is done, if it's done in a current structure, which is a tradable performance standard, or on an absolute emissions basis, that can change the size of the liabilities that firms have associated with their exposure. A brief note on CBAM. Some of these, it may in some ways be more important, the rollout of these kind of methods in potential export markets. And certainly if you listen to how Chinese officials and manufacturers are talking about the CBAM, you'd suggest that it's imposing a pretty significant cost upon China to have to pay a tax associated with carbon intensity in exporting to the EU, which is something that we'll expect to see from the late 2020s. The big question, though, really is one, about how that's enforced, and two, though, also just how big is China's actual exposure? So to give you a sense, China's industry is mostly produces for domestic consumption. There are some products that China doesn't export at all. There's no cement. Nobody exports cement, not just China. No one does. It's not the kind of thing that you sell across borders or over across long distances, I should say. There are some sectors where exports are a bit larger, but even steel, say, it's right, it's 5 to 10% of Chinese steel output is exported. And of that, most of that goes to Asia. Europe is a pretty small market. About 5 to 10% in official statistics, probably somewhat larger because of some transshipment, evading of tariffs that way. But still, this is not a major driver of demand for the sector, except in some high-end areas. International carbon pricing mechanisms might make a difference on some high-end products that rely upon international markets. But I would say really the most important trading system is the domestic one. And the question is, how fast does that expand? And how stringent, how high are the prices? And that determines how firms will respond.
Yeah, and how does the government manage carbon emissions from different sectors? Is carbon trading trusted as opposed to other types of planning that might be more immediate and more effective? But it's interesting as well, you point out that the impact of trade on on China's steel or cement emissions, it's really important to note that I think that outside of China, we often think of China's emissions as being a little bit more associated with their export industries than necessarily is really the case. And that's one of the highlights, I think, of the Guide to Chinese Policy, is the laying out all the data on those two topics. And with that, Ned, I want to thank you again for taking the time today. Listeners, I don't know if you realize that Ned has a cold right now. So, you know, normally he's even more fluent and good to listen to. But Ned, thank you again. Excellent discussion today. I hope you enjoyed it as well. And I hope, of course, the audience, you enjoyed it too. We welcome your feedback and thoughts. And we look forward to our next discussion and hope you'll join us again next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our original research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org. Thank you.